The time is 7 minutes past 10 o'clock. I'm Kara Lawrence. And wow, in the studio, I have a lively bunch of folks who are just three members of an eight-piece band that is about to blow a lot of people's minds tonight in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. It's Under One Sun, featuring Jamie Haddad, Billy Drews, and Salar Nader. And of course, Tom Knifick is here to help introduce the group as well. It's a great pleasure to meet all of you. I'm calling you gentlemen right now, but I think we'll be pals by the end of this hour here on WNUK.
Well, you might realize some of us are not gentlemen.
that's another option. Well, thank you very much for coming and spending some time here this morning on WMUK. There's a lot to talk about. There's an entire album to listen to. We'll take a few dips into the music here and there, but I'd like to get Tom's perspective, if I could. Tom Knifick, you are the chair of the jazz department at Western, and I know that connections to people in this group go back a really long time.
Absolutely. So Jamie and I are both from Cleveland, Ohio, and we've got a very rich and I think connected music scene. At least it was certainly that way when I was growing up. A lot of older musicians mentoring younger. You know, there's a lot of sense of community. It was kind of a wonderful thing growing up. Like you wanted to be something you want to be part of. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, we've talked about that before.
That's right.
Yeah, so many relationships that you still maintain from those days.
Absolutely. Very important to me, and I think very important to a lot of people. And Jamie is one of those people, and, you know, I was watching him and learning from him before we really even met, and then he gave me some of my very first, like, really quality jazz engagements, and we've just been doing things. So this is, not to put a year on it, but I'll say 1980, maybe, 81, something
yet.
Like that. That's right.
81.
So going back like that kind of distance, you know.
Yeah, all of that.
And then we've been doing projects, you know, there's something always kind of in the works or communicating about things. And this is a very special, I think this is kind of like I see it like sort of a capstone project for Jamie, something like a lifelong vision to bring certain artists together, certain styles together, certain people together in an extremely aspirational way where it's like, you know, other musicians say, if we could only do something like that. And that's what I'm seeing with these gentlemen. There was a clinic yesterday, just getting eight people to Kalamazoo in February from probably nine different cities, you know, just all that. But anyway, when I watched the project come alive from a distance and saw the record come out, and when we talked last August, is this a possibility? Well, it was going to happen. We will find a way,
yeah.
You know. And so I think at that point, you know, I think the gentleman should really tell you, you know, the best of the story of it. You know?
Yeah. Should it be up to Jamie, though, to tell us the scope of his entire career? Can you kind of give us a sense of his...
I want the people to stay awake.
Of his stature. I'd like to hear about...
You know, just a couple of things, though. I mean, he was working... I don't know if people remember Erto Morera, the fabulous percussionist who was Chick Corea's, you know, percussionist for years and years. Jamie was in his band, in that band. Is that in the 80s?
No, it was like 75.
Okay.
So, right, Bill? Where we lived in this process.
Yeah, 74.
Yeah, like that.
And then the great tenor player,
Dave Liebman.
David Liebman's drummer for a decade, maybe?
11 years.
11 yeah. years. This is just like this. All this stuff overlaps in our world, right? It's not like going to Ford Motor Company until you change jobs. This is all overlapping stuff. Paul Simon for pushing 20 years. He's on Esperanza Spalding's first. The first thing you hear on Esperanza Spalding's, I think it's her first record. The very first sound you hear is him. Mm. So it goes on and on. Anything else I should throw out there?
Well, everyone in the band has done many things.
Right.
So, and some of the younger guys are just now really getting known in the world, you know, and not only in the jazz world, but offshoots of all kinds of music. So.
There was some beautiful karma in the car yesterday, just coming from the hotel, in that Salar, who's sitting to my left, just joined. He's been a guest, but he just joined a fabulous bass player, Stanley Clark's band, who was also Chick Corea's bass player. Luisito Quintero, one of the other percussionists, he has been touring with Chick Corea. And so that's a lot of karma in one... City of Michigan, to have in one band.
Lucito's with him now.
He's with him currently.
Well, he's here with us tonight, but he's been on tour with
Yeah.
Him.
Well, the name of this group is Under One Sun, and I'm starting to get the idea that you're drawing from so many artists and creators who do so much of their own thing, but we are all unified under one sun, and you wanted to kind of create this concept that let people shine together.
You know, really true. I would absolutely agree with that. And, to add to that, I would say that the musicians in the band are from five different continents and from six different decades in age. And so in order to have a band that could share a sophisticated music language and be from such a diverse, background, it's not easy. It's not easy because to have a quality thing where the finer points of North Indian music or Afghani music or Palestinian Arabic music or jazz or Venezuelan music, these are all career things on their own if you wanted to make a life of those. So when you find common ground and people who can actually celebrate and have the skill set to be able to participate in somebody else's musical language and, accompany them, not mimic them, but accompany them in a real meaningful way, that's a very special thing. So, and I've been around enough that I've been with projects where it was a joke. It never worked. The jazz player out front treated the rhythm section like some kind of just drum machine, and they blew over it like it was, they soloed over it like they were just, servient, to the whole idea of them being the soloists, and they were just, rhythm machines. And, it's not what this is about. And so everybody has a chance to really, the thing that convinced me that we should do it basically is that when we did our first gig, the sense of true awe and excitement everybody had watching, the celebration that people had watching, Ali sing and play kanun, which is the Arabic dulcimer, or watching, Solar play a tabla solo, or Leo play, piano. Everybody was like going, who is this guy? I love, and everybody was truly in love with how everybody else participated. And then as we went forward, everybody brought compositions and everybody was, offering things for the band, and we played it all. But when it came time to make the record, Billy Drews, who's sitting to my left here, said, for as long as I've known him, since we were comrades in arms at Berkeley and Boston in 1971 or so, he'd been writing and playing great all those years, and he's been recorded on many, many, many albums, but he never made an album of his own. And not that this is his own record, but in a sense, it's all his music. So I asked the band if they thought, because they had been playing some of his music, if they thought it was an okay thing that we focus on Billy's music for this. And everybody signed up for that. And I'm glad they did, because, all the people in the jazz community were like, how did you get Billy to do that? At some point when you get to be as old as we are, we're 65. Billy and I are. And when you get to be that age, if you don't make a record, it's almost impossible to make one good enough, because you just know too much about great music and everything. So it's just like, how do I do that? And especially in this climate where, you have to pay to play at festivals and pay to make your own record and pay to have somebody promote it and pay for a record company to take your record. It's a crazy thing. And I also have to give a shout out to Oberlin College, where I'm a professor, who actually... this is on the Oberlin label, and they were awesome all the way around, and their facilities there were great. And so we're lucky. And so we celebrate each other every time we play. But I guess most importantly on this particular concert, Tom Kniffick, who's, has been nothing but a loyal friend. I met my wife through Tom Kniffick. Back in the day, they all taught at Interlochen Arts Academy. And so Tom had invited me up there, in Tom Kniffick fashion, always being loyal to his friends. And, I can never thank him enough. So thank you, Tom.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah.
Under One Sun takes the stage tonight at 7:30 p.m. in the Dalton Center Recital Hall at Western Michigan University. Yes, we've been hearing about some snow coming our way, but we do live in Michigan. This is not shocking news, so just add an extra layer and come on out.
I think we need to be under one sun this evening, don't you think?
That would be nice. And I'd like to ask Billy now, when Jamie mentioned that you have decades of pieces that you've written over the years, did you feel like going back into the catalog and grabbing some things for this group, or did you want to completely tabla rasa and make something brand new for this unique instrumentation?
That's really interesting question. Some of the stuff we did go back because, it's funny because some of the pieces that were written years ago had Jamie in mind to play it because just the way he approaches the music, my music. So, and some of them were in retrofit a little bit for this group. And retrofit also meaning in the hands of the great musicians that play it. They basically make up a lot of the parts, a lot of the important little shadings on it are improvised. And so did go back into the catalog, but it's for me, I don't really gravitate to doing that too much. I like to, it's not that I get bored with music, but I play it once and then let's play some new music. But it's like Monk, Thelonious Monk, he played his music, and like a lot of people, played it a lot and really took different takes on it, and really got to know it.
Yeah.
And that's why, in a sense, his music really became so like a staple in the jazz community, in a sense. And it's from playing those. So it is a good thing to go back and really and get deep into the music.
Push through any frustrations and
yeah,
and distill
and there's some new
more,
music yeah. too written, yeah. And everybody in the band writes beautiful too. So it was really an honor to have that go down like that for me. So I'm trying to think of the mix. I guess half of it was new and half of it was some stuff from the past.
The one thing that does happen though, He, every time he shows up at a rehearsal, he goes, "Man, I wrote another section for this tune."
Right.
And like everyone's
yeah,
going,
they go out to eat, and I'd be in the studio, and but a couple of things I think were okay. I think it worked out okay.
Couple.
All
awesome, man. We're lucky folks. It was a beautiful writing. I mean, people's ear gravitates to the writing right away.
Well, it's a trip. It's just about the music a little bit. Doing the masterclass yesterday, I asked the students about, if they all wrote music to whatever extent, compositionally. Yeah. And then most of them did. And I said, "Well, do you ever find it's kind of confusing? Where do you start?" Because I teach at NYU in New York, and it's a question I always pose to the students, because where do you start? You're influenced by so much great music, you have just listened to something. Where are you going to start? You're going to be influenced by this or that. So it's important to just do it, and that's the thing about this project. It ended up to be definitely not a traditional jazz record in a sense, with some wild blowing, but it was. I think it was a lot of magic that happened and simplicity, I think.
I'm so excited to hear something. Should we start with the beginning of the album, with
what
"Home
track
on the Hill"?
Would you like?
Are we going to be able to hear it also coming out of here?
Okay. I'll let Billy call it. What do you want to hear, Billy?
No, I don't. let's see.
Well, don't take too long.
How about just something like a simple thing like "Old Matey," a short little tune?
All right.
Which track is that? Three?
Okay. I'm queuing it up. Track three. Okay.
Great.
But just before we listen, I'm with Jamie Haddad, Billy Drews, Salar Nader, and Tom Kniffick. And Under One Sun takes the stage tonight at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. Tickets and more information at milleraudatorium.com or 387-2300. That's Under One Sun, incredibly diverse and different sound that is from their brand new album, a piece called Oh Matey by Billy Drews, who's here in the studio, along with Jamie Haddad, who kind of brought the project together with his friend Billy, and then recruited some amazing musicians who specialize in many kinds of world music. So to create a unified sound, that is an amazing accomplishment here. And they're performing tonight at 7:30 p.m., an 8-piece band. Let's talk about the music we just heard. And I'd like to bring Salar into this conversation now.
Hello.
We didn't get to meet you yet. Your instrument is the tabla.
Yes, it is the tabla.
How did you come to learn and become proficient?
A lot of people, first of all, it's an honor to be here with all three of you, all four of you. Thank you for having me. When people ask me how I met the tabla, I say the tabla met me, and it was a calling. So that's how that relationship started, and that began in 1983 in Germany. And I was there as an Afghan refugee. And I had a pair of tabla, and that was my main connection.
Didn't I hear you saying off air, you were born in 1981?
81.
So in 83, you're about, you're about two, three years old at this time?
Yeah, about two or three. We came over to San Francisco, the Bay Area, in 1985. A short stint in New York. And we got some NYU in the house right now, Billy Drews. But yeah, was in New York and continued my connection with the tabla. Any photos we have, little Polaroids or whatnot, you see me either holding one of the drums or both. You know, I was about half the size of the tabla, or the tabla was half the size of me. And I just, that was it. It was all day. And at that time I played in more of like the house party, communal, celebratory music. So the folk music was the number one thing. Mm-hmm. The folk, the spiritual music is what I connected to as a kid while I was making my kind of like advancement. So you learn that first. And then the tabla language, the bols. So a bol or bolo in Hindi or Urdu means to say or to speak. So if I were to say, how are you, I would say, Dagena Tenakena. And you can respond, and that way we have a connection.
Are you speaking in a drum language?
It is a drum language. So there's syllables that identify each finger. So there's ta, tete, terekita, ge, cut, and combined. I mean, you can go on and on.
I have actually, I'm having deja vu because there was a drummer, Rohan Krishnamurthy, who grew up here and once sort of explained how the the memorization, it's all done.
It's an oral tradition.
Yeah.
And so you learn to speak the language first, and you recite, and it's a mantra.
Yeah.
You know, it's a cycle, and dedekita, 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 dagena, dedekita, dedekita, dati dagena, dedekita, I mean, just, it's going on and on and on. And if you watch a lot of the percussionists from North and South India, they might be riding in the car with you on the way back from the airport, but this is like happening all day long. And even when they're walking through the airport, you know, you're walking in a rhythm. It's everywhere. It's constant. So, you know, and that's the beauty of it.
If you are using up most of your short-term and long-term memory on patterns for the drum.
Long-term is kind of foggy.
Do you end up like being a little bit less, I don't remember your name. I can't remember where I left my socks.
I used to have an issue with that, with like quickly, but it's all coming back.
Okay.
Yeah. This tea is helping. So,
yeah. Serving tea here on this live interview.
No, but the memory, yeah, we, as far as like the music of Billy and Jamie's concerned, I would listen to a piece and then go back into memory recall and find a composition that I'd been taught 10, 15 years ago and say, hey guys, how could this work in this piece? Yeah. So you have to be able to recollect, recall immediately and see if a compositional work or a groove will work. So in this context, there's a composition that opens up, I forget the title of the track, but it's in 7. Dagena, daga, dina, dagena, daga, dina, dagena, daga, dina, dagena, da, na, da.
Excursions.
So it was beautiful because it just, the piece inspired that. And so you take inspiration from different areas and then, you know, you marry them and hopefully they end up on the record. And thanks for not editing that out.
We were going to double it. Actually.
Solar, how did you meet Jamie Haddad?
That's in, like the tabla, you know, met me. It was the same thing. So I've been very blessed in my life to meet some of the most incredible musicians, inspirations, and just spirits that walk this planet. And one of them being Jamie Haddad. And I don't know, you going to pay me or something? What's going on?
Out came the wallet.
Make it rain. Keep it coming.
Can I have some specifics?
That's $100 business.
How long ago was that?
So, beautiful story. In 2007, I was touring with this incredible producer by the name of DJ Shabby Sabah. So Shub Sabah, and he was in San Francisco. He's no more, God bless him. And we were in, he told me, you know, we have this festival in the Pyrenees Mountains. So between, in a city called, town called Formigal, which is in between the border of Spain and France, the Pyrenees Sur Mountains. So he said, he was going to be DJing his music. So in 2006, 2007, he was writing for EA Sports games. So FIFA, Madden. So he was like a front runner in the DJ world at that time. And so he wanted some live percussion to go along with these tracks. And, you know, I would always scratch my head like, these tracks are already so busy. Is there any space for me? He's like, man, I just love it. Let's do it. So fly to Spain. And we actually landed in France. The car ride up to this place was a funny story, actually, because it was a stick shift Mercedes. And he's like, can you drive? And I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to drive. But, you know, it was scary out there. Anyways, that's a whole another hour-long interview, just the car ride. We get to the Formigal Pyrenees Sur floating stage. The water is on a lake. Beautiful lake.
The stage is on a lake.
Is on a lake. Get there, and I'm like blown away. It's like paradise. And Shabby Sabah says, you know, legendary percussionist, composer, Jamie Haddad's also on this show. And I'm like, okay. You know, so I haven't met Jamie yet. And I'm like looking for him, a little anxious. Like, how will we work this out, all that. And I've always been taught to listen, you know, and learn. So although I'm playing with everybody, I'm trying to listen and learn. And it's one of the number one mantras that my teacher, Zakir Hussain, has taught me. And so I meet Jamie, and Jamie's like, all right, man, you play the tabla, okay. He's just like, looking at my setup, and it's just literally a pair of tabla, you know? And he's like, let's just have a good time. Let's have a nice hang. You know, that's always been his, and be of service to the music. And, you know, here are the tracks. These tracks come on, and we're both on each side of the stage and just going at it. And there's 8,000 people dancing across the lake. So there's a partition. There's water between us and the audience. And people are just partying up in this mountaintop for, what, two and a half hour set? And I have to say, not to sound cliche, but it was love at first sight, man. It's like we met.
Yeah, and then that's the first time you meet and you play right away.
You meet basically. And that language connects, and it's that ancient 2,000, 3,000-year-old connection, the frame drums, the tablas, you know, they're having their time. So.
Well, the one thing about it that's unusual in with regard to Salar for me, there are very few classically trained North Indian tabla players who understand, first of all, American hip. I mean, really understand American pop music, hip hop. You know, they for all the knowledge and beauty that they have, they just don't, you know, have the feel. He's an American. He was raised in L.A. So he you know, besides that, he's like a minor league baseball player, but we won't get into that. But he actually get it, you know, gets it. And we spoke about the jazz tradition, the jazz form, and all this and that. And his memory, because everything's learned by rote in the Indian tradition, he'd learned the music before we would. Like one time down, two times down, he's looking at us like we're half brain dead. And he's like going, you know, what's wrong with you? Sounds not coming, you know. And so.
I think he demonstrated how he does that.
Yeah, yeah. It's just really, really, you know, it's and that's, you know, that's a tribute to the training. And but also he made wonderful, because you have to imagine when you're a tabla player, a lot of times you play duet. So you're playing drums and like sitar. And so there's so many elements of the music that you have to elegantly support. And the instruments are fine instruments. They have, you know, microtonal tuning, and the drums are tuned. So it's not, there's no splashing and banging going on. You know, it's really an elegant art form. So when you introduce that into our music, everyone kind of like has respect for the detail a little more. The stock, everyone's stock goes up in relationship to, you know, because there's three percussionists. You know, I have a drum set, so I just can't smash my way through these tunes. I really start thinking different. Not that I would, but it's another layer.
That's an important point, because you do play maybe less as an individual, as a player, and you try to make the music clear, you know, have it real clear.
Well, before we go back and hear yet another track from Under One Sun, I want to remind listeners that the concert's tonight at 7:30 p.m. in the Dalton Center Recital Hall, and details are at wmujazz.com, tickets available at milleraudatorium.com, tickets available at the door as well. In the track we listened to earlier, I heard an accordion, I heard a voice, a singer, I heard an array of percussion, I think I heard reeds, and... So we need to go finish out the rest of the rundown of the personnel here, if we could.
The suspects.
I have to give a shout out to our bassist Roberto Occhipinti from, who's a Canadian, but he's all Sicilian all the time, and he also edited the record and did a wonderful job of doing it. If the bass sounds exceptionally good, it's because Roberto did do the editing.
A lot of work, copy
and paste.
Because all my music was written by hand, which I like, but it gets a little confusing for him. So he took the time to put it into Finale, whatever.
Is he with you tonight?
Yes, he's in
my kitchen as we speak.
Okay. Who else will be on stage with you tonight?
Also, accordion player Michael Ward Bergman, who lives in New Orleans. He's with us. Ali Amr, who's Palestinian, he's also with us. Leo Blanco, a piano player from Venezuela, and Lucito Quintero, who's a percussionist, also from Venezuela. And I think I've I haven't left anybody out.
Okay. That's everyone.
Yeah.
What I have queued up is the 7-4 or the one that you kind of quoted from. Let's hear some detail.
The introduction that Solara had sang just before that we'll start this piece.
It's called Excursions Through a Field of Yellow Daffodils. Under One Sun is the name of the group, and we just heard a composition of Billy Drew's called Excursions Through a Field of Yellow Daffodils.
What were you thinking of? Billy, what were you thinking about when that happened?
Yes.
Well, it sounds like I was on something, but that was not the case. I was very young. And not very young, but I was...
Are those like mutually exclusive kind of things?
Hopefully. Where I grew up, I had both, where my parents' house was and my grandma's, it was about a 3-minute walk between everybody. And my one grandmother had a woods behind her house and my other grandmother owned a field. But behind the woods, we would go, it was great to grow up. We just hung there all day, you know. And one day, I was a little old, I said, I'm going to go see what's beyond the woods, you know. And, you know, you're little kids. It's to us now. It's not, you take a 5-minute walk and you're there. And I went, and it was like a whole other new thing. It was an old farmland. And it wasn't a working farm anymore. They had sold it. But there were daffodils still, you know, because the bulbs live on forever.
It must have been April or something.
And it was so, it was like, for me as a little kid, it was like, you know.
Trippy.
Yeah.
Magical kingdom.
Yeah, like a natural acid or something. You know, and I remembered that, you know, so just going into it, you know. So that's
What I was going to say before Jamie took over the interview for me, which I do appreciate. I don't like having to ask all the questions. This is not in a negative context, I couldn't tell you what to make of that. What I heard, in the sense that, but when you get to a certain age, you categorize things within seconds of hearing them. You say, "Oh, that's American blues. That's this. That's that." Or you can even figure out influences. But I had not yet decided what that piece was at all.
Well, a lot of times people hear equated to that sounds like a film score.
Yeah,
or something,
yeah,
you know.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because so much of the great writing for the great writers that we have in the world are through film. You know, it's a great outlet to for them to do their thing and evoke what's going on what's trying to be said. You know, as part of the film, you know, the dialogue. So it's really heavy. So people equate it to that. Oh, it's just like, wow, because maybe it just brought me here or there, me to this field.
Yeah, there's a grandness to it, some sweeping gestures sort of stuff.
Symphonic, actually.
But at the same time, you're listening at the smallest level, and the detail is so intense there. I couldn't quite, you know, decide what kind of piece it was, because actually it's more like having to keep going around an object and view it from all these different angles as you listen.
Well, I would say I would take that as a compliment. I mean, no, because that's nice. It means it's not good or bad, but it's different at least. Because, you know, yeah, it was going back to young writers and people trying to find themselves. It's like, you know, this is a business what we do in a sense, but we don't try to look at it that way. And everybody's trying, well, I want to come up with something new, but I'm so affected by this, by the old jazz tradition and the heritage and the homage to the jazz tradition. So to hear that is actually, it's refreshing. At least it's, well, something happened, you know.
Definitely.
Food for thought, maybe, at least.
You know, and also, I mean, the idea that tune is in a time series is really fast seven. You know, what did it's fast, really fast seven. And so most bands, you know, don't have the, you know, especially ones with, you know, three different percussionists for three different places and accordion and all that, aren't playing in that type of thing. And so part of it is part of the musical background and training that, you know, a lot of us have in the band, where we share an influence of how to dissect those kind of things and put them into a larger playing field that makes it more comfortable to look at them and reorganize that seven into all sorts of other kind of geometric shapes that make the whole idea of doing it you know, exciting and refreshing and not stressful. I mean, most people, if you ask them to play seven that fast, they just look at you and say, I'm out. I don't even know what you're talking. I can't do that, you know. And so it's a fun thing to be able to share that kind of language. So Wow, Billy, that was really good.
Billy, that was... See, here's the thing, Billy.
No, you see, so it's a real... The tune is very simple.
That was Solar.
Yeah, that was Solar.
The tune is very simple. In a sense, it's got a melody and there's aspects to it. It's kind of tricky, but it's simple. But it's what it's done in the hands of these musicians. What it does.
I just no one out there is with you when you say it's simple. After hearing, I mean, I was mostly thinking like, wow, I could have studied percussion and understood that, but I'd have to go back and.
When you wrote this 30, 35 years ago, did you ever imagine this type of language going on top of it?
Well,
this is Billy.
Well, we only because when I wrote it, we had this years ago. I lived in downtown and had this great place,
Manhattan.
In Manhattan, yeah. And we played music all the time. Jamie was always over. I had this little Porta studio, which was, if for anybody knows, it was a cassette 4-track. Ooh. And we had, I mean, we made some music that I still want to put some of it out. It's kind of funky, you know, the real cheap mics, and we had overdub. If you know what bouncing, you would know. You're in a studio here, mm-hmm. bouncing like tracks. Somebody would come in. Hey, yeah, Mitch Foreman's coming in at 1 o'clock in the morning after his studio date, and he's going to bring this little vocoder, and he's going. And we did this stuff, and we actually recorded the tune.
So you saved
and
all.
Jamie
the...
played Redungum on it.
Okay,
you know.
So the better stuff is in the vault.
No. This is, we took it to another place, but we actually did. So, no.
That's the next album.
Now, you will have this album with you tonight when you perform, right? There'll be copies available of Under One Sun, music composed by Billy Drews. The concert starts at 7:30 p.m. in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. And just got a few minutes here to wrap up before we hit the news. It's gone by very quickly. And we've scratched the surface.
No politics?
But, Well, like I said, we've only got about three or four minutes.
Well, you know what, though? In a sense, it's if the musicians and the musical attitude and the musical life would... I play in a band also called, with a gentleman named Paul Winter, and this group called the Paul Winter Consort. And Paul often says that if Congress would get together and howl as like dogs to start off the whole, because he has a tune called Wolf Eyes, and at the end of the tune, you know, when we do concerts, he howls and the whole audience howls, and at the end of that, people look at each other and appreciate just some kind of primordial, you know, the fact release. That we're all on the planet together doing this kind of, you know, just trying to exist. And in a way, you know, in a band like ours, we're really celebrating the differences. You know, we don't look at them as distinctions or parts of, that are distinguishing them other than us. We look at them as, you know, as a manifestation of what we are as a species, and celebrating it because it just shows so much more of the playing field of what's possible that we're just, you know, it's a lovely thing to see. So I look forward to seeing all you all out there tonight.
Thank you, Billy. I will leave it to Tom to invite listeners again.
Well, obviously, if you've heard even like 1 minute of this 60-minute interview,
gentlemen,
you need to know that this it's maybe a once in a Kalamazoo lifetime. And I thank my guest. I thank Jamie for the auspicious efforts involved, and it's going to be I don't know when it's going to be in Michigan again, but please don't miss.
Thank you, Kara. You're very insightful.
Yeah,
great,
well.
Really.
Awesome.
My pleasure.
Awesome.
Thank you all, and have a wonderful concert. I'll see you tonight.
Thank you, Kara.